Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Blog Talk Radio. I am Sona Hollywood on Blog Talk Radio. com, and we're listening to Make Mine a Double by Dracula Franchise, and I wanted to shout out to Dracula Franchise for allowing us to use their song this evening. So we are having a great show this evening. We're going to be talking to Marcus Chong, actor Marcus Chong. You may remember him from The Matrix, where he played Tank. He played UAP Newton in the film Panther. It's going to be a great show. So glad you're here. Glad you're listening. All right, let me mute the music, and we are live. All right, let's hope that, okay, first of all, I just want to lay down some ground rules. Please respect the host. Please respect the guest. It's good to disagree, but we can't be disagreeable. Okay. All right, here we go. Caller, area code 347, I'm going to bring you on. Hello, welcome to I Am So Not Hollywood Radio. Who am I speaking with? Can you hear me? Hello? Wait a minute. What's going on? Let's see. Please bear with me. I don't know. Hello? Hello, hello? Okay, let's try this again. Hello? Caller 347.
Hey, what's going on? Yes, it is Phil John. I am here.
I'm sorry, Phil. It's just like, okay, this is a new switchboard. Everybody, please bear with me. This is a new switchboard. This is my co-host, Phil John. Hi, Phil. How are you this evening?
I'm doing good, Linda. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm excited for today's show. We have a caller from 310. Let's bring this caller on. Hold on. Hi, caller 310.
Hey, how you doing? Melvin Jackson Jr.,
better known as Bernard from the HBO series The Wire. How you doing this evening?
Good. I'm blessed. How you doing?
I'm good. Say hello to my co-host, Phil John.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, man, how are you? How's everything going tonight?
Everything is good, man. Staying busy.
Okay.
Good. What have you been up to, man?
Well, just booked a new role in this Dogtown movie. It's Corrupt. So we're getting ready for that, and I'm shooting three web series right now. So I'm staying busy, hosting, doing comedy, just trying to be a blessing to others.
That's awesome. Congratulations, Mel, on all of your successes. And so how's life been? I mean, I know you've been out there doing a Hollywood shuffle, the struggle, so to speak.
Life has been good, you know, just constantly putting in the work and letting my work speak for itself. And I'm just trying to, like I said, definitely stay busy and connecting with new people and helping any way that I can.
Okay. That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, I'm glad that you took time out of your schedule because I know you have an interview at 5:30 your time. So
yes.
I'm glad you took the time to come by and say hello and let us know what you're doing. We're going to be talking with actor Marcus Chong, who played Tank in the Matrix movie and UAP Newton in the movie Panther. And we're going to be talking about what happened to him and his situation with Warner Brothers and Screen Actors Guild. So we're expecting Marcus to call. He's coming. He's traveling from. I'm not quite sure, but he said that he's going to be maybe about five minutes late. But in the meantime, Phil John is also an actor. And Phil, just, you know, blast out your resume, what you're doing these
days. I got to give my spiel because I know I've kind of been like, you know, just came on just like, hey, and everyone's like, well, who is that other third person in the room? Because, you know, we already had a superstar come in. So I guess now my time to give my little spiel. I'm good. I'm blessed. I'm still here in New York. I'm an actor. I just finished a workshop called Fire Up, where, you know, we talk to actor hopefuls. I've been doing the commercial circuit for a long time. So I have a Comcast commercial coming out, at a Church's Chicken commercial running down in Atlanta. And now I just finished a project for Discovery ID called A Crime to Remember that should be coming out this fall. So
okay.
That's enough for me. But, you know, I know the L.A. brothers are equally as, you know, hard on their grind as well. So, you know, I appreciate you calling in also, Melvin.
Booking a commercial is a big thing. You know, that's good money right there.
Yeah, it is. But you know what I always say, man? A lot of times in this business, we don't really choose the work. The work chooses us. You know, I came into the business wanting to be like the next Jack Nicholson. You know, well, the black Jack Nicholson. And not to say that that won't ever happen, but it just so happened that, you know, commercials kind of embraced me first. So I just rode with it, you know.
So, Melvin, so, how have you been as far as have you – I know you did something. I don't know if it was a spoof, but you did some kind of commercial for – I know you were wearing, like, see-through pants or something
right.
of that nature.
Yeah,
not see-through pants.
I know, right? It was a commercial for Fruit of the Loom, their whole little plastic campaign thing they had going on. And I was cast as a rapper, so – That was a fun shoot.
Is it airing
okay,
now?
Did it.
Say it again.
Is it airing now? Is it currently in rotation?
Well, that's the thing. It was I think it's internet based, and I don't know if my portion wasn't gonna be aired on TV. So
okay,
it was kind of a confusing thing where it's like, well, you know, is this a commercial for the loom or is it a commercial for plastique? So. But
gotcha.
I'm not complaining. The checks were still good.
It's all about safe sex and paychecks and
right, the kids are able to eat. So that life goes on. Life is still on.
That's what it's all about. It's all about the dollars and cents. So, yeah, but Melvin, we see you out there doing things, and so and you, I forgot. Did you mention who you were playing in the Dogtown movie?
I did, but I'll say it again. I'm playing Legendary
okay.
Corrupt.
Okay.
Part of the Dogtown, him and Daz, crew. So yeah, it's a blessing because of how it all came about. I started a campaign, put a picture of myself and him next to each other, and I started a campaign as if I was campaigning to be the president of the United States. And people supported it. One thing led to another. It got to Corrupt showed it to Daz. Daz contacted me, asked me to audition for the role, and I booked it. And, the rest was history. Take it, madam, into your own hands.
Okay, so are you guys now
congratulations.
Shooting? Yeah,
what
definitely
were you saying, Linda?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Are you guys shooting now, or what's the story?
No, everything is in the beginning stages. We've only done the, right now a promo shoot just to kind of give people an idea of what's to come. So we've been giving them little snips of the promo clip. And just kind of the portion of when Tupac came, I got out of jail and knocked out two songs in 24 hours. And now we're just trying to just get things right. So when we do it, everything is in order. So we're just taking our time and not rushing it and just allowing things to go and at the pace it's supposed to.
Okay. Well, once everything jumps off and you're able to talk about it more, we would love to have you come back and, we'll do a 4-hour interview with you and whoever else you might want to bring along with you.
Okay. Sounds good. You know, I'm always, your family, so I'm always down to talk to you guys.
Yeah, I'm still Mama Linda. I know. I get it.
Well, if you're from the DMV, everybody knows who Mama Linda is.
Yes.
But those of you are
so,
listening.
You know, but definitely keep pushing. Keep pushing.
Okay. Well, we're still waiting for Marcus Chung to call in. But it's good to have two of my faves with me, of course, Phil John, my ride or die co-host, because we've done this, what, a couple of times before, Phil?
A few times. We've done it a few times.
A few times. Always a pleasure. Yes. And, of course, Melvin was one of my wire babies. He's not a baby anymore. He's a full-grown man. So... That's awesome. That is awesome. So, what I want to talk about is, what do you guys think, you know, about this whole thing with Matt Damon, trying to school the African-American filmmaker, the director, I believe she was either director or producer of Dear White People, on diversity in Hollywood. Did you guys hear about that?
You know what? I didn't hear about it. I didn't get a chance to really watch the clip. But I don't know. I don't think he really has a right to school anybody on that issue. I mean, I don't know exactly what it is, but it seems like, you know, the connotations are negative. But I mean, I loved Dear White People. I think Dear White People was brilliantly done. Even with the promos, I think it was just brilliant. So, I mean, I think they approached a very sensitive topic eloquently, and it was
right. Fun.
You know,
right.
I supported that movie opening weekend because I thought so. I don't know, man. There's a lot of haters. A lot of haters in all colors. So it doesn't
right.
matter.
So basically, what he told her was that what she told him is for okay. Let me. Matt Damon has a
and
show.
And I love how we're
HBO.
Stalling because Marcus is late.
I know, but it's good though. It's good.
I mean,
we can all you know
next
how
topic,
we do.
The next topic should be why black people are always late to interview.
Right.
But moving on.
Right. Right. But we got Melvin.
That's all right.
We got Melvin.
We'll get him. We'll get him when he gets online. I tell you that much.
Right. So I'm just hoping. I mean, it, to his credit, he did send me. He called me and he sent me several text messages. And he's traveling. He did not say from where, but he did tell me that his plane was supposed to get in at 4:51, and then he was going to jump on the show on the call while he was going to, I guess, to his hotel or wherever he was going. And he sent me, you know, text messages and everything, reconfirming the call time and the call-in number. So I just hope, you know how it is with traveling. I hope everything is okay. He didn't get delayed. I mean, things happen,
yeah,
but
yeah.
this is still
yeah.
a good show because this is the first time we've had a show in quite a while, and it is what it is. And things happen. Life happens. Life happens. So, okay. Well, actually, Marcus is calling right now. So, Melvin, I'm going to put you
Uh-oh.
On mute, and I know you have a I know you have another interview at 5:30, so if you jump off, I will understand, but I'm going to put you on mute right now, okay?
Okay, you guys have a good one. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Oh, man, it was a pleasure, man.
Okay. Bye.
Hello?
Okay, this has to be the one and only Marcus Chung. Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello? Is this Marcus Chong? Identify yourself, please.
Yeah, this is Mr. Chong.
Oh, no, we're not standing on formalities. We're not standing on formalities tonight. No, this is not happening. This really isn't happening.
Oh, then you can call me M. That's what my friends call me.
Okay.
Right now I'm at the Music Center in Los Angeles at the Mark Taper Forum. It's the theater I started at when I was 20.
Okay.
So I happen to be here to... Yeah, so let's get to business.
Okay. So, Marcus, I want you to meet my co-host, Phil John. He's in the same business with you. He's an actor out of New York.
Hey, Marcus.
And,
what's going on,
hello?
Did you hear him?
Hey.
Marcus,
yeah, can you hear me?
Hey there. How you doing?
I'm good, Em. How are you?
Very good.
Cool.
And
glad you made it.
I think we still have Melvin Jackson, who played Bernard on the HBO series The Wire, still on the line. And he's in the new film about the dog pound, you know, Snoop Dogg and everything. And he's playing Corrupt. And he came on to chat with us for a bit until you arrived. Are you still there, Melvin?
I'm still here.
Okay. Say hello to Marcus Chong.
Hey, Marcus, how you doing?
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you, man. Love your work, man. Keep doing good things.
Okay. So we're going to get into the business of this interview. Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, and I have to shout out, and I'm doing this very sarcastically, Mr. Ben Falk. He's a movie writer for Yahoo.com, and it was his little piece called, what was it, Marcus? It was called
Jonathan.
Actors who sabotaged their career. And one of the actors he named was Marcus Chong. So this.
Well, the first actor he named me, that's the only thing he did get right, was by putting me first in any category.
Okay. I'm going to let you take it from here, Marcus.
Let's just let him have it. Tell us a little bit about what happened.
You're on the stage.
How did you make the list?
Well, let me explain the entire matter. The first matter is, I have to define a couple of things. The first thing is, what a signatory is. A signatory is a major studio or network like Warner Brothers, Paramount, Universal, CBS, NBC, ABC. A signatory has an agreement with the federal government and the union labor called Screen Actors Guild. Under a law, an agreement contract called a codified basic agreement. In this agreement, Warner Brothers can never hire an American SAG member, take them overseas without a proper union labor contract. And that's what this whole dispute was about. Because when I arrived in, what's that?
Just so our audience knows, Marcus, we're talking about The Matrix, correct?
We're talking about The Matrix.
We're talking about The
Matrix.
We're talking
about Joe Silver's. I like the name call. Let me name call real quick.
Okay, I just want, but you said it was shot out of the United States, so it was on location out of the United States, just so that we clear on that.
Say that again?
It was shot on location outside of the United States, right?
Correct. We shot the film in Sydney,
okay,
Australia.
Cool. Awesome. I just want to make that clear for the listeners.
Okay, Marcus, before we get really deep into what you want to discuss, what we want to talk about, let's just give everybody a little bit of a background.
Yes.
You played Tank in the first Matrix movie, Operator Tank in the first Matrix movie. And so let's go from there. Let's start from that point. What happened that your character was not in subsequent?
Well, I'm going to give you the backstory. So what happened was Warner Brothers called Screen Actors. Hold on. Warner Brothers called Screen Actors Guild to hire me on The Matrix. That's the first thing that occurred. They hired me, and they did not give me a union contract, which means simple things like per diem, a dressing room, chair on the set, a drive to set, things like that. Things, all the things I did not get. When I was shooting The Matrix, I had to walk to set from Sydney, Australia, about 3 miles every day, and then after we shot, another 3 miles home. These were the oddities that were occurring. I called Screen Actors Guild actually the first day of shooting, and they said they have nothing to do with it. And that's when the problem started, before we even started filming.
Okay.
So the things that will lead up to that will be, okay, so we finished shooting the movie. I kept my end of the bargain. I did an excellent job in the film. That was not enough for them. So my agent at the time, Carol Olisky, a privileged talent, she's the president of Privileged Talent, she was calling Warner Brothers before the movie came out to try to get some promotional materials for me on the film and try to get me involved in the press junkets and things like that, and they wouldn't return her phone calls. So what happened was the executive producer, Barry Osborne's assistant, Angela Pritchard, she basically did her job. She called me to the press junket. She called me to the parties for the actors and the crew. She called me to go to the premiere. When I showed up at the press junket at Warner Brothers Studios on her call with a drive-on pass, I was vamped by about 5 or 6 security guards who manhandled me and threw me off the lot and told me never to come to Warner Brothers. This is about 2 weeks before the movie came out.
Okay. And do you know why that happened to you?
Yeah. Because if they treat me like a star, they got to pay me like a star. And since they were violating all laws and they're criminals and they want to steal all my money, my pension and health, they're like, we got to eliminate him before the movie comes out. And that was what their agenda was. So when the movie came out, it was the biggest hit, you know, in the history of film at Warner Brothers. So then they were in a little bit of a rock and a hard place because they treated me like crap, and now they need me to be in these sequels. So they kept calling me. Larry Wachowski, Andy Wachowski called me once a week. Then all of a sudden their agent, Dave Wordchapter, called me, telling me that he had negotiated my deal. And I said, well, I have my agent Carol doing the deal, and that wouldn't be fair. But I tell you what I'll do. I'll give her cut as long as you guys take a cut as well. He said, I would never take a cut from you. I said, well, that's kind of a conflict of interest because you have to, you know, have some kind of connection with me to negotiate a proper deal for me. No emancipation without proper, representation, that sort of thing. They wouldn't have that. They basically threatened me and said, Marcus, if you don't do these sequels, you're never going to be in this industry again, blah, blah, blah. So
well,
I said, hey, listen.
I said, listen,
you know, my worth. Now, I don't negotiate my contracts. My managers get an agent. My agents negotiate my contract. I never negotiate money. But I do tell people my worth. So I said, man, I'm worth $1 million. But I said, if you want to buy me, you can buy me cheaper. Just call my agent, and she'll probably give you a better deal. They didn't want to do that. At that point, they had already broken the law by having their agent negotiate the contract behind my back. So they were like, shit, this is an issue. We got to just get rid of them. So that's what they planned on doing, getting rid of me permanently.
Okay.
I guess I'm trying to follow him. I guess one of the things that come up in my head is that, like, I know the one thing that I always talk about is, like, never having post negotiations, you know. So I'm just curious to know, like, what was the details of the deal before you even stepped foot on set?
The details of the deal was that The Matrix was non-union and Reloaded and Revolutions were non-union, and that's illegal. You can't do that. Not Warner Brothers. Maybe an independent producer can. They can't make non-union films. That's impossible. The whole reason you get into the union is so you can work for CBS, so you can work for a signatory. That's the only reason you get into a union. But if the union is not protecting the actors, you might as well just go non-union. There's no point. If Warner Brothers is making all these non-union movies, and they are non-union, then there's no point in getting in the union. So the details are this. You know, I was being resistant. They wanted to starve me out, hold all my monies, take all my residuals, not give me any pension credit, not any health credit. And I was upset about this because I had worked for Warner Brothers when I was 10 years old in Roots. So they had a long relationship with me. You can go to GearMX/Marcus/, and you can see my reel, which is, you'll see my roots on that .com. GearMX.com/Marcus/. So then what they did is they wrote me a letter you know, a letter of responsibility on their part for getting in the way of my negotiations, saying, hey, it's our fault, but you're out. So I called Larry and asked him to ask you back. I called them back and I said, hey, what the F are you think you're doing? I made you guys what you are. You guys had never even done anything before this. They didn't care about that.
And we're talking about
so
the
what they did was they had
this
guy, Stephen Slack of Warner Brothers, left Warner Brothers studio in Burbank, drove to Venice Beach, where Eon Productions was at the time, to have a conversation with me. Now, this is a man I never met. He had quite a hostile conversation with me. It's all recorded. They recorded it illegally. It's called illegal wiretapping. But in that conversation, I basically said, hey, you guys aren't taking me out of my movies without me doing a documentary. And that word documentary made them very scared. So they took the photos of me in the famous replica shot as Huey P. Newton. They took the photos of me from the motion picture, which are promotional use only photos. They sent them to the CIA. They sent them to the FBI. And they sent them to the LAPD. When Stephen Slack demanded my address, I gave it to him because he's my employer. I said, what do you want it for? He said, I can't say it over the phone. I said, that's a threat. Don't come near my house, period. You have no reason to be at my house. You don't work here. So I called the police immediately. I gathered a secret camera crew. I went to the police to make a complaint. My camera crew went in there first. I walked in. I gave my name at the front desk, and I was arrested within 15 seconds. Of giving my name.
Hold on.
Never got to make
hold
my
on.
Complaint.
Hold on, Marcus.
Sure. I have this on videotape,
by the
way.
Hold on. You were arrested because you went to the police station to let them know that you felt threatened by these individuals, and they arrested you.
Not only being threatened, Linda, but the fact that they were stealing all my money.
Okay, but wait.
Because they're stealing
my
money.
Okay, so why were you arrested?
I was arrested because when Stephen Slack made that invisible threat, I called Larry and Andy Wachowski on their voicemail, and I said, hey, Larry, Andy, if you send anyone to my home to fucking harm me, I will come and kill you and your brother.
Wow.
Now, that's not a threat. If they don't send someone to my home, there's no problem. But they took that and they used it as though it were a threat, which is anybody comes to somebody's home, you should expect to get shot.
Wow. So they
when
have
I say shot, when I say
level.
Shot, let's be clear. Hold on a second, Linda. When I say shot, or when I say shoot, remember, we're in the movie industry. I don't own a gun, never have. I'm talking about shooting them on film for the documentary. They took that and didn't understand the metaphor of it, which is, man, I'm going to shoot you guys if you come over here.
But you have to look at
camera.
It this way. Wait a minute. But look at it this way, Marcus. They took it to mean, first of all, you're a black man in Hollywood. These are white folks.
I was going
to
say that.
These are white folks. They didn't take it metaphorically, even though you meant it metaphorically. They didn't take it metaphorically. They took it as, oh, this guy, he's a black man. He's an angry black man because, first of all, they used that promotional photo of you as Huey P. Newton to bolster their argument or to back up their claim that you were a threat, even though this is from a movie in which you played a character. And then for you to say, and I understand, I think we all understand that you said that you meant it metaphorically, but they didn't mean it. They didn't take it as such. So,
well, I can put it to you like this. They dropped the charges.
Okay.
They dropped the charges. So that shows you how much of a threat it was.
Right. Okay, so we want to get, because we have like 30, we have 30 minutes left. We want to get.
Yeah, but when people talk about he was arrested, they should also mention in the articles, but they dropped the charges.
But you know how that goes, Marcus. You know how
of course,
they're
we're not talking about how it goes.
You know,
we're just talking about slander and defamation. So let me just continue on so we can just understand something real quick.
Okay.
After I was arrested, you know, I had to leave Los Angeles because there was a manhunt for me. I was already reported to the FBI and the CIA, so I had to leave the industry for my safety.
What?
I have not been on an audition for a film since The Matrix 18 years ago.
So where
okay,
did you
so
go
did
when
you
left Los Angeles?
Okay.
What's that?
Where did you go when you left L.A.?
I went to New York. And that's when I did a couple Law and Orders, and I did some theater.
Okay. So when did you do, Panther before Matrix, or?
Yeah, I did Panther in 94. It came out in 95.
Okay.
I did Broadway. That's why I'm at the Mark Chamber Forum. I won the Theater World Award, and the Mark Chamber Forum has my award in their Hall of Fame in the lobby here. So I came down here to take some photos next to the Hall of Fame, but I had done Broadway when I was 20 years old.
Okay.
You'll see that at gearmx.com/Marcus/. You can see some of my materials that no one's ever really seen for a long time.
Okay, so
I have
what,
a question. By having this interview, what did you hope that listeners take away from it, from your story?
Say that again.
What do you hope that the listeners take away from your story?
I want the listeners to understand that their money is what the studios are after. So when the studios make a film like 12 Days a Slave and hire all British actors, they're doing an anti-American campaign, especially an anti-African-American campaign. So these movies, with all these British actors coming over doing these kinds of film, even if you look at Selma, I was just with Reverend Jesse Jackson in Chicago. We were talking with his lead representative, Reverend Jeanette Wilson, about the fact that the guy that played Martin Luther King is not American.
David Aiello is British, for
yes.
those of you who didn't know, he's British.
Well, this is what they call the British invasion, which is the main thing that the studios want to do is avoid the IRS, any union labor laws. So when the young and the wonderful fans are out there trying to support their favorite actors and they're trying to buy the DVDs, they're not trying to do bootleg, they're trying to get the Netflix, they think that we're getting residuals. And they think that they're supporting us, but they're not. They're supporting the studio, and then the studio can get rid of us. I mean, let me ask you this question. Where's Mekhi Phifer?
I mean, I agree. I agree with
Where's
that.
Where's Lorenz
yeah.
Tate? Where are all the greats? They've just vanished. They vanished for a reason. They vanished because the studios won't let any black actor be powerful. The studio's number one motto is don't let any actor be more powerful than the studio. And I'm worried about the consumers more than myself. I'm worried about the ticket buyer is being duped for their money. And at some point, you have to empower yourselves because the movie ticket prices are too high. They're doing a lot of duping. They're playing The Matrix almost every night around the world and not paying me for it and acting like this is an acceptable behavior. Screen Actors Guild is holding their hand through this whole thing. This is highly illegal activity. It's called blacklisting.
Okay, so
collusion.
So do you? So let me ask you this question: have you been quote unquote blacklisted from Hollywood?
I have not been blacklisted from Hollywood. I've been blacklisted from the Kool-Aid drinkers in Hollywood, the people that are hypnotized by the power and the fame and the money, and I haven't drank the Kool-Aid.
Okay, no, wait. What I'm saying, I can't. I really can't right now because I'm just like, this is so. I love that the Kool-Aid drinkers. But what I'm saying is, I know you're doing stage, and I know you have some other projects that you're working on, independent, not of the Hollywood market regime. But my question to you is this: if an agent called or a casting agent called or whatever and said, hey, we have this role, we want you to come audition for it, you know,
I have a letter from my agent, Carol Oliski, that That's been already given over to the National Labor Relations Board. It's already been put under penalty of perjury, saying exactly what I'm telling you. For this is her words. I don't believe in blacklisting. I don't believe they have the power to blacklist. But I'm saying
no.
They can do their thing. But my agents have all concurred. I have Rob Ziemba. I got a ton of agents that will concur with this, which is they won't audition
me. But that's what I was trying to get at. They won't audition me.
Yeah, they won't audition me.
Okay.
They won't take any phone calls. They won't accept any meetings.
Okay, so this is when the solution, and Phil, I guess you probably would agree with me, is to do what a lot of people have been doing, is to create your own and work outside of the quote-unquote studio industry.
Studios, yeah.
There's no point in working for studios.
Where does Marcus Chong go from here?
Hold on.
Yeah, I mean, there's no point in working your whole life and career to get with a studio who's just going to steal all your money.
Right,
you might as well do non-union films and not pay the union dues and go through all that rigmarole. You might as well boycott the studios and boycott SAG, because let me promise you, no one out there is going to get as high in the film industry as I did, because they're not going to let you after me. I set a bad example for all of us in their eyes, which is, shit, this brother knows what we're doing. He's going to tell everybody. It's a union labor issue. It's not about, I never talk about salary.
Okay.
That's not my position.
Okay.
That's my agent's job. But they're going to lie to you
okay.
and say it was a salary complaint. It wasn't a salary complaint. It was pay me what you owe me. And don't expect me
okay.
to do two more billion-dollar movies for you for free and not even be allowed
okay.
to go to the premiere and not even have any kind of chair on set or a dressing room where I can change my clothes.
Wow. Okay, so...
And not only that, the racist bullshit that they were saying subliminally was just impossible to tolerate as well.
Well,
okay.
my next question is, what's next for Marcus Chong? I want him to answer that for us. What's next for you?
Right now, I'm working on the Alexander Dumas story as a theater piece. It's a one-man play. I did it in New York, the Black Spectrum Theater. I did it in Detroit at the Charles Wright Museum of African American History. But we're still developing it. So I think it's right now. We're going to try to get it on its feet and present it to some major theaters, make it into a motion picture, and I have my own production company where I have some dynamite scripts. But before I did that, I had to help my soul. You know, I couldn't just go up there and act being confused, feeling guilt-ridden with all the horrible accusations and the terrible things that they said about me. And I had to face them. So I did an NLRB against Warner Brothers and SAG 6 months ago, and a friend of mine was speaking with Francis Ford Coppola, and he said, listen, Francis thinks you should change your perspective of your image. Maybe we can work something out with you and Francis if you drop these NLRB cases, which I dropped a month and a half ago, and that was the irony of this new article coming out by that shitty writer, Ben Falk, who's not a writer. He's just a gossip columnist, and he doesn't get his gossip correct. So I felt, and I do feel, that that was a direct result of me dropping the NLRB cases. It was an attack.
Well,
they saw it as a step of weakness. I felt that it was easy for them to make a phone call, have their, publicity department call over there. That's what they do. Got their publicity team, call over there, send them a couple promotional used photos from The Matrix, which they're not allowed to use in such a manner, without permission from me. Which is a lawsuit coming to you, Mr. Falk, and Yahoo.com. And it's also a lawsuit for Warner Brothers for allowing the picture to be used. And this is what they've been doing, using all promotion use photos to slander me and kind of basically say awful things about me. One of the things they said in an article was I broke into Warner Brothers studio, which is impossible to break into. It's like breaking into Fort Knox. And I stole food. This is an accusation, which is like, shit, if it got that bad, I can go to food stamps. I don't need to break into Warner Brothers to steal food.
Exactly. Okay.
What kind of food are we talking about here? Did I make a turkey? Or was it just like I went in and I... Right, you get the point.
Okay,
yeah.
I get it. Okay, we have a caller holding, and I want to bring this caller on. You're calling from here in the D.C. area, 202-735. You're on the air. Welcome to I Am So Not Hollywood.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Thank you
for taking my call. Marcus Chung, you are a gorgeous man, by the way.
Who are we speaking with?
Dia.
Hi, Dia.
Tia. Yes, and I hear the genuineness in your voice. You sound really, really sincere. It feels as if you were pimped out by the industry, and it just seems like slavery, but in the entertainment and industrial complex. And I would like to ask, did you do anything revolutionary while you were doing The Matrix or before The Matrix that made you a targeted individual? Because it seems like you've been targeted, just like any other revolutionary would be.
That's a really great question, Kia, and you're absolutely correct. They saw me do Huey P. Newton. They wanted the urban demographic. They wanted the validation of the black audience coming to see Matrix, and they took that and turned it around so that I couldn't profit of it because they wouldn't want the image of Huey P. Newton to ever see success. So it's not just me. It's also cadre Huey P. Newton. It's two with one stone.
Wow. Yeah. Was anyone else treated like you on in terms of the
contract? Yeah, no American actors. Gloria Foster didn't get any union contracts. But I'll tell you this, another great question. The Australian actors are getting all their labor because they have a different union. They're getting all their residuals, they're getting all their pension and health. It was only the American actors who were belong with the Screen Actors Guild that they said no one's going to get that money.
So you don't think that Fishburne, Keanu, and Carrie Ann Moss, do you think Keanu sucked my dick Reeves.
Is the producer of The Matrix.
Let me say this. This is really important.
Because in, hold on, in 2004. Hello?
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, in 2004, Keanu Reeves put $70 million into the Unsung Heroes of The Matrix Fund and left me out of it. And paid like a bunch of people from the original Matrix like $1.2 million. Meanwhile, smiling in my face, pretending to be a SAG actor. I don't know he's a producer at this time. I just think he's another actor like me and Lawrence. But when we were on set, Lawrence many times did not come out of his dressing room boycotting because they would not pay him. There's an article called The Second Year of the Global Rule 1 in which Lawrence went and spoke on this matter publicly to Screen Actors Guild. You can see this on the Screen Actors Guild website, Second Year of the Global One Rule, where he was saying, we've got to make these Reloaded Revolutions movies union, which they did after I was eliminated because they were afraid if they kept them non-union that they would really get hung.
Okay, so do you think Fern, Carrie Ann, and Keanu, and we want to try to keep it a little bit PG. Do you think
keep it G-rated.
Now,
yeah.
Not G-rated, but PG? Okay.
PG.
Well, I didn't say any cuss words.
No,
I don't know if I get your point.
No, you
but
didn't.
I had to get that jab in because I need to put Keanu on blast.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But do you think they're getting residuals from the subsequent Matrix movies?
Are they getting residuals from Reloaded Revolutions?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Hmm.
Okay.
But I don't know. I can't.
Interesting.
I know Keanu's
not.
Keanu gets 15% of the gross.
Okay. So Keanu has sort of a Jack Nicholson type deal, because if any of you were aware, and also for the listeners, that Jack Nicholson did the first Batman movie. Jack Nicholson's character died in the first, he was Joker, I believe, not Joker, Was it Joker? Not Joker. He was.
Yeah, he was Joker.
I forgot what character he was.
He was a Joker.
Was Joker.
Yeah, but Jack got 15% of the gross out of that, man.
But he also struck a deal, whereas he would get a percentage of subsequent Batman films. So if you know that,
right, because he's a producer. He gets the 15% of the gross on the back end. That's what that is. He doesn't have to get residuals.
Right. And as we
he's
know,
getting the gross.
Jack,
I mean, he should be paying people residuals.
Right.
When you look at movies
Pursuit
of Happiness, those are not union movies. Well, I mean, no.
Right,
they'll give if you're a day player or like 2 days, you know, you're working, they'll give you a residual because the residuals are nothing. It doesn't mean anything. But if you're a significant role the way I'm a significant role in films, no. Now, Panther is a union movie. They did that all by the book. But MGM acquiesced Panther and will not put it on DVD.
It's not on DVD?
It's not on DVD?
Is it on Netflix?
I would have to say no as well. I don't think so.
Okay.
Well, I speak to MGM all the time trying to get them to do it.
Okay, so we have about 13 minutes. Kia, are you still there? Okay.
Yes.
I think she's gone.
Okay.
Is she there?
No, she's still here. She's still here. I really appreciate you calling. And
thank you,
Kia. What we're going to do, we have about 13 minutes or so left into the show.
Wait, Marcus. Wait a second. Marcus, my friend Rain Pryor just said hello to you.
Oh, Rain Pryor?
She said, tell Marcus.
Rain was on Panther with me.
She said, tell Marcus I said hello. He's a soulful man.
I love Rain.
Aww.
That's my girl. I'll let her know.
Okay, so I have to give my background story on how I know Marcus. I met Marcus like 1985, in Los Angeles. He was with Todd Bridges and Jimmy Bridges, and we were at a event in at LA City Hall. I can't remember the name of the event and what it was for, but I remember meeting Marcus, and he's just such a sweetheart. And we're birthday twins. Both our birthdays are July 8th. And
God help us all.
Whatever.
It's a joke. It's a joke.
It's a cancer thing, Marcus. It's a cancer thing. And so we just reconnected on Facebook. And as I explained to Marcus when we reconnected on Facebook, I saw what was happening with the whole what happened with him and Warner Brothers and everything like that. And I just wanted to, I felt that he needed his story to come out. He needed to tell his own story. And I just wanted to say, I'm so grateful to you, Marcus, for allowing me and my platform to give you a voice, and I really appreciate that.
You know, it is what it is, but I really, you know, have a conflict with all these young actors who are around the world, whether they're in China, France, Germany. They're coming here because they think that they're going to be able to have this life. And it's going to be, you know, a role model's life, which is we want to follow in the footsteps of a gentleman like Marcus Chong. And we don't know what's really going on. So I want empowerment for the audience and empowerment for actors. And there's a lot of steps that are going to be needed. But I can assure you of this. I just left Reverend Jesse Jackson. And I do want to, you know, wish my condolences to him because his mother just passed away. I met with Reverend Jeanette Wilson at Rainbow Push, and they're very much behind this new information that's coming out today, even though it's happened a long time ago. The information is new, and they're writing letters to Warner Brothers as we speak. They're writing letters to Screen Actors Guild, and they're writing letters to Yahoo.com, and we're going to pursue this matter because we want to see me do some work. At least let me do some bad acting. That's all I'm saying. If you're going to knock me, no one's ever called me a bad actor. And no one can ever say that I've done any work that wasn't professional. But what I can say is when you're dealing with hardcore criminals, hardcore white collar criminals, you're going to have a good agent, but you're not going to. It's going to be a tough thing because the agencies are working with them.
Okay.
And I'll end it on this note. There's an A list. There's a B list. The A list stands for availability to work list. The B list stands for, oh, you're on the blacklist now. So anyone born in this country is a SAG member. Anyone born in the world is actually a SAG member. It's only when, and what I can prove that because it's called members in good standing. As long as Screen Actors Guild is willing to take your money to be a member, everyone's a member. That's how come you can get hired and become a union person. You have to be hired at this time by a signatory. But these signatories are not going to give you roles with any meat and any substance. It's just going to be one little line here and there.
And can I just piggyback off of what Marcus is saying? And I can attest to this because the biggest issue that I have with a lot of the young actors, a lot of the new actors, is they look at the SAG after union as a diploma. It is not a diploma. It is not a degree. It's not going to put you in a better position in the industry. It is a union, period. It's business, you know, and I think that people are too quick to join without really doing the research they need to do.
I agree. I think people should understand that the union serves the studios, not the actors.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we have 8 minutes in...
Well, let me end this on a positive note and say my Dumont play is real sexy, but it's also one of the greatest stories I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah.
It took me 17 years. I had to actually go to the New York Library at 42nd and 5th Avenue, and I had to get one of those scanners from the Mission Impossible movie that Tom Cruise had.
Mm-hmm.
Got one of those in 1999, cost me $2,000. I had to go in there because you're not allowed to copy or transcribe any of the books. I had to illegally get this history because they keep it from us. But this history is grand. It starts in Haiti, and it ends on top of the world.
Alexander Dumas.
We're talking about the novelist who wrote The Count of Monte Cristo, The
Three
Musketeers, The Man in the Iron Mask.
Yes.
He was a black man.
Many people don't realize that
D'Artagnan was black. And this, again, is a part of the whitewashing, which these intellectual properties specifically belong to black people. So black people who want to have intellectual properties, the way that white people can do Shakespeare, this is our classical intellectual property that we own, that was left as an inheritance to us from this great man. And I want the people
exactly.
to have a chance... I want the people to have a chance to know that he wrote more than anyone in history, and you can always go there. When you see these shows, The Tudors, that's all taken from Alexander Dumas. Those are taken from his books. So I just want to give back. I don't expect much in this world. It's not about the money for me. It's about destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And God is the greatest. To me, it's like no studio is greater than God.
He said God is the greatest and no studio is greater than
God.
God
is the greatest for me.
And for me, too. Okay, so we have 6 minutes left, and we're going to really end on a positive.
6 minutes? Are you fresh, Ron?
You are so stupid. Okay, we're going to give our guests... Kia, we're going to start wrapping up. Is there one final thought that you want to share with us?
Marcus Chung, you're so fine. That's all I got to say.
We're going to try to get Marcus here in the D.C. area. So just hit up I Am So Not Hollywood on Facebook and like the page, leave us a message, and we'll keep you posted, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
thanks, Kia.
Thank you for calling in. Okay.
She is all fine, too.
Okay, Marcus, we're going to give you the last say. Well, actually, I have the last say because I wrap up the show. Bill John, is there anything that you would like to add or say
Yeah, I'll share something. I'll do a little Shakespeare speech for you. I'll say this.
Hold on, let me just do this real quick. The last word. Okay.
I'm going to have the last word. Let me do this, and then we'll have the last word.
Okay.
But softwood light through yonder window breaks. It is the east, and Juliet is the sun. Oh, rise, fair sun. Kill the envious moon that is already sick and pale with grief, that thou art made a far more fair than she, but not her maid. The vestal livery is but sick and green, and none but fools to wear it. Cast it off. It is my lady. It is my love. Oh, that she knew she were. Look how she puts her hand on her cheek. Oh, if I were just a glove on that hand, that I might touch that cheek. Through the airy region streams so bright that birds would sing and think it were not night.
Okay. Draw some Shakespeare.
That's for the ladies.
Y'all hear that? Y'all hear that? Okay, he said that was for the ladies. And on behalf of the ladies, we accept. That's dope. Okay, Soliton, 3 minutes and counting.
Listen, it won't even be 3 minutes. I just wanted to say, you know, I think that it's great for at least to have this platform for actors to come in and voice their opinion. So I just wanted to say thank you, Marcus, for being courageous enough to not only tell your story, but also give us the opportunity to provide the platform for you to do it. So Godspeed, brother.
Yeah, well, we're all in this together. And I want to thank all of you and the listeners. And two famous quotes, one from Huey P. Newton, all power to all people, and one from Alexander Dumas, all for one and one for all.
And one for all. And I want to say to Phil John, to Marcus Chong, to Melvin Jackson Jr. for calling in, to Ms. Kia for calling in, and to everybody who may not have called in or listening via these internet, thank you so much for supporting I Am So Not Hollywood Radio. It is a labor of love. I'm going to try to do better in the next coming months and bringing more of these type shows where you can actors can come and talk about what's going on. Also, I have to shout out once again Dracula franchise for the great theme song. I love my theme song. Make mine a double. I've been looking for a theme song for a long time, and you know, Phil, I've never had a theme song. So,
once again,
to Dracula franchise, make mine a double. And that was the song you heard when the show started.
And I'm on my way to Canada tomorrow. I'm on my way up to the Toronto Film Festival tomorrow. So, you know, pray for me.
I got you, my brother. I got you.
You got it.
And Marcus, again, you know, I love you much. I got much love for you, my brother, my birthday twin. So we're gonna do this.
We got that. Don't worry. I'll be on the East Coast next July.
Okay, we're gonna celebrate our birthdays together.
Right on.
Okay. Are you laughing, Phil?
Uh oh. No,
okay.
I'll be there. I'm down. And,
okay.
You know, come on, let's have a cancer party, you know.
That's right.
So, I mean, the thing is, everyone has to be happy. Don't let this shit depress you. Excuse my French. But honestly,
okay.
Empower ourselves and turn off the TV. Stop buying the cable.
Okay.
Don't go to the movies. Okay. Write a letter and an email to them and let them know if they don't stop their shenanigans, they're not going to get your money. Save your money.
Okay.
Bootlegged. That's what I say. I'm not getting paid anyway. Bootlegged.
Okay, on that note, you've been listening to I Am So Not Hollywood and, on Blog Talk Radio. I don't even know where I am right now. I don't know where I am. Okay, so it will be in the archives within 24 hours if you want to listen. Please download the link.
I know the brother's on the call right now. He said, bootleg
it.
Get that on. Get it on.
He said, bootleg it. Don't bootleg my show. I really need the revenue.
Right. Don't bootleg black-owned projects. Bootleg, you know what I'm saying.
Well, okay. Like, follow us on Facebook and like us on Twitter. Bye.
Later.